This is For the Record, program number 1127. Biopsyop Apocalypse Now, Part 3, The Eugenic Virus. This is being recorded on April 27th of the year 2020. This program is a series in my ongoing coverage. I believe this is the 16th program dealing with the COVID-19 outbreak. The first one was For the Record 1111, and all but this are up on the SpitfireList.com website with written descriptions featuring the documentation. In For the Record 1125, I spoke about what I meant by bio-psyop apocalypse, and I mentioned the concept of three-dimensional chess, or really six or seven or eight-dimensional chess, because the analytical approach to this virus, really in order to do the phenomenon justice, needs to deal with these many different levels of analysis. I want to emphasize very, very heavily that the separation between these different levels of analysis is for purposes of understanding analysis and cognitive grasp, that all of these aspects of it are part of a unified whole, and they all play into one another. In discussing the eugenic aspects of the virus, I want to emphasize that that, in turn, is inextricably linked with the economic effects of it. And in particular, our next program will be called the Wealth Concentrating or Wealth Concentration Virus, because the further concentration of wealth into a few hands and the consequent diminishing of wealth or bleeding of wealth from the hands of many who already don't have enough is part and parcel to this phenomenon and is part and parcel to the discussion of the eugenic virus. Now, before getting into the eugenic aspects of the virus, I want to update people on a few key developments vis-a-vis the COVID-19 outbreak. From the New York Times of April 23rd of 2020, we're going to deal with a great many stories from that one issue of the New York Times, April 23rd of 2020, although this is not from the Western edition. But from the New York Times of 4/23/20, 1 in 5 New Yorkers may have had COVID-19 antibody tests suggest by J. David Goodman and Michael Rothfeld. 1 of every 5 New York City residents tested positive for antibodies to the coronavirus, according to preliminary results described by Governor Andrew M. Cuomo on Thursday that suggested that the virus had spread far more widely than known. If this pattern holds, the results from random testing of 3,000 people raised the tantalizing prospect that many New Yorkers, as many as 2.7 million, the governor said, I'm sure that means New York State, who never knew they had been infected, had already encountered the virus and survived. Mr. Cuomo also said that such wide infection might mean that the death rate was far lower than believed. Later on in this program, we're going to talk about how the virus is being called the Cuomo virus and how New York City has not only been stigmatized, but how the stigmatization of New York City plays into a general right-wing view not only of New York, but of people of color, liberal politics, gays, unions, and other phenomenon that are basically, and that are despised by the right wing. Even if the much discussed phenomenon of false positives in the testing, and certainly testing appears to be a weak point in treating the virus, even if the well-documented phenomenon of false positives, or also maybe false negatives, is factored into this, if in fact 1 in 5 people in New York city have had the virus. This argues very strongly against the virus having originated in China. In For the Record program 1115, I recapped an interview from 1984 that is contained in AFA program number 16, Dealing with AIDS. That interview with Dr. Wilbur Jordan of Martin Luther King Hospital in Los Angeles talks about the epidemiology of AIDS and how remarkably unlikely it is that the disease would first be detected in gays in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, and then subsequently traced to third world countries like Haiti or Africa, where people already had poor medical treatment, poor diet, and many other overlapping factors that would have made the manifestation of symptoms of that lethal disease altogether clear. By that same token, the notion that so many people in New York would have tested positive for this virus, even if there are a lot of false positives, argues from an epidemiological standpoint against China being the point of origin of this virus. And in the series of programs that I have done, we've talked about the massive DARPA / Pentagon research into bat-borne coronaviruses from China or in and around China. We have spoken about the closure of Fort Detrick and about the gain-of-function experiments. Those have long been criticized by responsible people in the medical and scientific community as being just too dangerous. To make a long story short, what they involve is the genetic manipulation of existing viruses to create zoonoses, in other words, infections that will jump species. One of the most important was that an experiment, the results of which were published in 2015, in which Dr. Ralph Barich, B-A-R-I-C, of UNC in Chapel Hill, genetically manipulated a coronavirus that was native to the Chinese horseshoe bat and made it capable of infecting human lung tissue and mice. Another thing to bear in mind is the fact that at this point in time, any virus can be made in its entirety in the laboratory. This is a technology that has been called by some gene editing. I spoke about it in For the Record 282, done in the spring of 2001, called Designer Genes and the AIDS Vaccine. Critics and experts have long viewed this technology with alarm because it would permit the development of very sophisticated biological warfare weapons. And it is worth noting that this designer gene or gene editing technology will permit any virus to be created in a laboratory, and that creation could be done in such a way as to make it appear to be a natural mutation. It is a technology that in some ways is analogous to the 3D printers, which can be used to make a serviceable firearm, because there is a lot of discussion, well, this virus didn't originate in the laboratory. I think many of the people who are saying that are sincere, and what they're trying to avoid is playing into the right-wing scenario, we'll touch on that, that China deliberately developed this virus, and that it may have escaped from a bioweapons laboratory. The laboratory that has been the focus of this is a virological laboratory in Wuhan. It is not a bioweapons lab. It is a high-security biological research facility, and as noted in a BBC article that is featured in a sidebar article, a supplement to For the Record 1124, the research or research into the use of many of these types of technologies and viruses and bacterium that would appear to be legitimate medical or scientific research can be used to mask biological warfare research. But note that any statement that the virus didn't originate in the laboratory is simply not consistent with contemporary technology. Any virus can be synthesized in its entirety in a laboratory, and in fact, the aforementioned Dr. Barrich has been commissioned to synthesize the most common or the optimum variation of COVID-19. Now, in connection with the large number of New Yorkers that have tested positive for antibodies to the coronavirus, reviewing very quickly from the book, Lab 257, The Disturbing Story of the Government's Secret Plum Island Germ Laboratory by Michael Christopher Carroll, copyright 2004, and published in hardcover by HarperCollins. We read the following, skipping down. In the summer of 1966, special operations men walked into three New York City subway stations and tossed light bulbs filled with Bacillus subtilis, S-U-B-I-T-I-L-I-S, a benign bacteria, onto the tracks. The subway trains pushed the germs through the entire system and theoretically killed over 1 million passengers. I think one should be asking the question of whether something along those lines, I don't know about tossing light bulbs, but whether some kind of vectoring technology has been used to distribute that virus in New York City. I would also note that the majority of people who are infected with at least one variety of the virus, and there are a number of them that have varying degrees of lethality, people infected with the least or one of the less serious variations of COVID-19, and there are a bunch of them, would not indicate a high degree of mortality. And whether it was this type of technology or something else, given the bent of people around Steve Bannon at the epicenter of the anti-China campaign, given that there are people like the late Dr. Larry Ford, whom we spoke about in For the Record 317, he was a biological warfare specialist and doctor who had worked under contract for the CIA in the late apartheid regime's Project Coast, the South African apartheid regime's biological warfare program against black people, both in South Africa and neighbors. Dr. Ford told a girlfriend of his that to understand him, one should read the Turner Diaries. When you have people with the consummate abilities of someone like Dr. Ford, and when they have the capability of doing something like this, these are people who are at one with the ideological milieu of people like Steve Bannon, whose ideological cues, the primary ideological influence on him is Julius Evola. Evola was an Italian fascist and an acolyte of Mussolini. Eventually, he decided that Mussolini was too moderate, and he switched his affiliation or had something of an ideological gain-of-function manifestation, and he associated himself with the Nazi SS, who were financing his work by the end of World War II. When we get into another aspect of the bio-psy-op apocalypse, the China-killing virus, we will review some of the many covert and overt ops against China, the documented U.S. intel involvement with the unrest in Hong Kong, documented U.S. intel involvement with the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province, the efforts against the Huawei electronics company, the arrest or the charging of Chinese nationals in the Equifax hack, the crackdown on Chinese media, the trade war, sanctions against companies or proposed sanctions against companies that were selling high-tech things or sensitive technology to China. This is across the board. And, of course, Trump's trade war with China. There is an article in German foreignpolicy.com from April 21st of 2020 called The Suspicion Campaign, that talks about the anti-China rhetoric and the scapegoating of China and the hints by people like Donald Trump and others that in fact the COVID-19 virus, again, quote, escaped, unquote, from a Chinese biowarfare laboratory. That laboratory in Wuhan is not a Chinese biowarfare laboratory. It is a high security virological research center. There is, as a matter of course, U.S. military / DARPA involvement with research at that facility. There has also been some cooperation between Chinese and American scientists in researching coronaviruses coming from bats. That is not in its essence, unlike the cooperation between Chinese scientists and scientists around the world on the COVID-19. However, as we looked at in For the Record 1119 and 1120, and in a Food for Thought article called Disturbing and Thought-Provoking Article About DARPA Research into Bat-Borne Coronaviruses, there has been a U.S. military involvement with the scientific and medical community involved with the research at that laboratory. Now, again, from the Suspicion Campaign article from GermanForeignPolicy.com of April 21st of 2020, last weekend, U.S. President Donald Trump warned the People's Republic that it should face consequences if it was, quote, knowingly responsible, unquote, for the spread of the pandemic. Washington is simultaneously spreading deliberate rumors that the virus could have originated in a Chinese laboratory, whereas scientists vehemently refute the allegations. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas declared, he, quote, does not want to exclude that the WHO will have to deal with these issues. On Monday, Chancellor Angela Merkel called on Beijing to show, quote, transparency on the issue, unquote. At the same time, deliberate rumors are being spread in the U.S. that the COVID-19 virus could have originated in a Chinese laboratory, possibly in a bioweapons lab. The U.S. government indicated that it does not rule out this possibility. U.S. intelligence services are currently investigating the issue. Particularly given the lie about Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction, such an allegation must be perceived as a threat to lend legitimacy to new aggressions. And in the Whitney Webb article that we talked about, that was the major focal point of For the Record programs 1119 and 1120, and the aforementioned Food for Thought article, disturbing and thought-provoking article about DARPA research into bat-borne coronaviruses, there was discussion of the role of Radio Free Asia, the parent organization of the board of Board of Broadcasting Governors, the BBG, which is basically a CIA derivative organization, in spreading this disinformation, and an Israeli intelligence officer who was involved with the original disinformation campaign against Saddam Hussein being behind the anthrax attacks in the U.S. was involved with that as well. More from this Suspicion Campaign article from German Foreign Policy. Already last week, German media organs have increasingly been calling China the, quote, culprit, unquote, behind the COVID-19 pandemic outbreak. Under the headline, quote, What China Already Owes Us, unquote, Germany's Springer Press even called for, quote, reparations, unquote. Leading British and French politicians have expressed similar views. British Foreign Minister Dominic Raab, R-A-A-B, has repeatedly declared that China will be held responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic. French President Emmanuel Macron has now joined the campaign. Regarding the pandemic's alleged origin, he declared, quote, there are clearly things that have happened in China, unquote, again quoting, that we don't know about, unquote. I love the conclusion or the next two sentences from this article. it is not clear how Macron can know something exists that he does not know about. It is, however, clear that he seeks to implicate Beijing, and that entire article is in the written description for the record 1127 and will be available presently. Now, something of a preview of what I think will probably be in this series for the record 1129, Walking the Coronavirus. This is another program talking about the Nazi track Serpent's Walk, which, like another book published by National Vanguard Press, the publishing arm of the National Alliance, that book being the aforementioned Turner Diaries, this book is, I believe, a blueprint, a manifesto for how the Nazi underground in this country is going to proceed. In this book, to make a long story short, the Nazis go underground, which they did. The SS go underground, buy into the opinion-forming media, which they did, infiltrate the military, which they have done. Just witness, by way of symptomatology, to use a metaphor, at the Army-Navy game last year, 2019, there were a number of both Army and Navy cadets who were photographed giving the white power sign, hand sign, behind President Trump. They thought it was a focal point for levity. But the presence of people who might do something like this in the military is simply a matter of record. Now, in Serpent's Walk, after they infiltrate the military, the descendants of the SS come into power after martial law is declared following a biological warfare attack by genetically manipulated viruses. Those are called PACOV, standing for Pandemic Communicable Virus. Then, after martial law is declared, the Nazis take over. From Serpent's Walk, written by Randolph D. Calderhall, and the two people talking here are Mulder and another guy, not Wrench, but Lessing, a mercenary who becomes converted to the Nazi cause. Speaking of this, yes, well, PACOV, unquote, stands for Pandemic Communicable Virus, one of the uglier results of military experimentation with recombinant DNA. Do you know what that is? And Lessing replies, yes. Very well. Let me tell you in layman's terms, unquote. Mulder, who, by the way, in the book is a descendant of Heinrich Müller, head of the Gestapo, who did, in fact, go to work for U.S. intelligence and was the security director for the remarkable and deadly Martin Bormann Flight Capital Organization. Beginning again. Yes, well, PACOV stands for Pandemic Communicable Virus. I've also stood for Pandemic Coronavirus, one of the uglier results of military experimentation with recombinant DNA. Do you know what that is? Very well, let me tell you in layman's terms. Mulder extended a hand to shush Wrench, who had started to speak. PACOV consists of two separate reworkings of two DNA chains of existing viruses. It's a piggyback weapon, a two-stage operation. You send in the first stage. The vectors, agents of transmission for PACOV-1, are extensive. It spreads for hundreds of miles if conditions are optimal. PACOV-1 produces only a mild, flu-like infection that disappears within a day or two. Public health authorities would overlook it, never consider it a serious epidemic, and even if they did, they'd have to look carefully to isolate it. Once a victim is over the flu, PACOV-1 becomes dormant and almost undetectable. A month or two later, you send in the second stage. PACOV-2 is also a virus just as contagious as the first and just as harmless by itself. It reacts with PACOV-1 to produce a powerful coagulant. You die within 3 minutes. No warning, no vaccine, no cure. Those not exposed to both stages remain unharmed. PACOV-2 goes inert like PACOV-1 within a week or two. Then you get your victim's country, all his property in undamaged condition, and a lot of corpses to bury. One of the things I wonder about in terms of the varying severity with which the different varieties of COVID, the virus that produces COVID-19 affect people. Some are quite mild, some are serious. There also is some are lethal. There is a wide variety of symptoms. They attack, in addition to the lungs, the heart, the kidneys, the brain, and interestingly enough, because of the PAKOV-1 and PAKOV-2 cross-vectoring produces a coagulant, note the following. This from a Good Morning America segment of April 20th of 2020, 1 week ago, by Sasha Pezenik, P-E-Z-E-N-I-K, and Dr. L. Naba, N-E-B-B-A, Das Malki, D-A-S-T-M-A-L-C-H-I. Why are so many COVID-19 patients also seeing blood clots, excerpting? Doctors in COVID-19 hotspots across the globe have begun to report an unexpected prevalence of blood clotting among COVID-19 cases in what could pose a perfect storm of potentially fatal risk factors. It's going so common with severe COVID cases. Doctors are recognizing it as a new pattern of clotting called COVID-19-associated coagulopathy, or CAC, which is notably associated with high inflammatory markers in the blood like D, dimer, and fibrinogen. Quote, in the beginning of the outbreak, we started only giving them medicine to prevent clots. We saw that it wasn't enough, Dr. Christina Abad, capital A-B-A-D, an anesthesiologist at Hospital Clínicos San Carlos in Madrid, told ABC News. They started having pulmonary embolisms, so we started full anticoagulation on everyone. And what did Serpent's Walk talk about? Once a victim is over the flu, PAKOV-1 becomes dormant and almost undetectable. A month or two later, you send in the second stage. PAKOV-2 is also a virus just as contagious as the first and just as harmless by itself. It reacts with PAKOV-1 to produce a powerful coagulant. I'm not saying that the virus produces a coagulant, but certainly the symptomatology is similar, I guess one could say. The clot thickens, so to speak. Forgive the bad pun, but these are pretty grim times, and as Nietzsche said, a joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling, and I have a few of those die in these times. Now, eugenics, the eugenic virus. Eugenics, we've done many programs about eugenics. I've listed those in the description. For the record, 1,075, 1,029, 908, 909, 32, 1,013, among others. It is a pseudoscience in which pseudoscientific information or disinformation, as has often been the case, are collated and presented to justify pre-existing social, racial, and ethnic and economic prejudices. Also, eugenics can be used to basically rationalize, as it was in the Tiergartenstrasse 4 or T4 euthanasia program in Nazi Germany. It can be used to rationalize the elimination of what was termed useless bread gobblers or life unworthy of life. People with serious illnesses were not well-to-do, the elderly, the disabled, and people in general of third world extraction. Eugenics was a powerful ideological tool in restricting immigration in the 1920s and 1930s. We went into that at great length, and for the record, 1,013, fascism and the politics of immigration. And one of the things to note about this virus in general, in so many different aspects, this is a virus that whose manifestation. This pandemic is fulfilling a right-wing agenda, a fascist agenda. Last week, we took a look at the democracy-killing aspects of the virus, and it is also basically manifesting a eugenic dimension as well. From USA Today of March 26th of 2020, quote, people with disabilities are afraid they will be discriminated against because of coronavirus by Rick Gervais, capital J-E-R-V-A-I-S. People with disabilities and chronic health conditions are some of the most vulnerable groups during the coronavirus crisis, though often overlooked in the national debate, according to advocates. The virus has infected more than 69,000 Americans and led to more than 1,000 U.S. deaths, according to a site run by Johns Hopkins University. And again, that is consistent with eugenics. So is the following from the New York Times of March 24th of 2020 by Austin Fracht, capital F-R-A-K-T. Who should be saved first? Experts offer medical guidance. How do doctors and hospitals decide who gets potentially life-saving treatment and who doesn't? A lot of thought has been given to just such a predicament well before critical shortages from the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, it would be irresponsible at this point not to get ready to make tragic decisions about who lives and who dies, unquote, said Dr. Matthew Wynia, W-Y-N-I-A, director of the Center for Bioethics and Humanities at the University of Colorado. This is an explicitly eugenic consideration. Reading again. How do doctors and hospitals decide who gets potentially life-saving treatment and who doesn't? A lot of thought has been given to just such a predicament well before critical shortages from the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, it would be irresponsible at this point not to get ready to make tragic decisions about who lives and who dies, unquote, said Dr. Matthew Wynia, director of the Center for Bioethics and Humanities at the University of Colorado. Facing this dilemma recently, who gets a ventilator or a hospital bed? Italian doctors sought ethical counsel and were told to consider an approach that draws on utilitarian principles. In layman's terms, a utilitarianism approach would maximize overall health by directing care toward those most likely to benefit from it. If you had only one ventilator, it would go to someone more likely to survive instead of someone deemed unlikely to do so, like someone who was elderly and already afflicted. Now, there has been a lot of discussion of how people of color and people of color who are generally farther down the socioeconomic ladder, both in this country and elsewhere, have suffered particularly from the coronavirus pandemic. It should be noted they also are people, again, generally farther down on the socioeconomic ladder and therefore more likely to have other complicating medical conditions and perhaps less access to medical care. A long article dealing with the plight of African Americans in the Milwaukee area was from ProPublica of April 3rd of 2020. It's by Akilah, A-K-I-L-A-H, Johnson, and Talia Buford, B-U-F-O-R-B. Early data shows African Americans contracting and dying of coronavirus at an alarming rate. I have included this entire article in the written description for the record 1127. It will be available presently. However, that same basic discussion. The essence of it is also in many other articles that I will be at least touching on in this program. One of those, and again, notice how the eugenic aspects of this are inextricably linked with money matters. People who are farther down the economic ladder are suffering the most, and as we will look at in our next program, those who are already well-to-do are getting richer. The rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer, and various things that serve people farther down on the socioeconomic ladder, from public transportation to nonprofit corporations, are being badly damaged by this outbreak. Again, the eugenic virus, one aspect of this multidimensional chess that we are talking about in the bio-psyop apocalypse now. From Consortium News of April 22nd of 2020, an article by Ramya, R-A-M-Y-A, Vijaya, V-I-J-A-Y-A, COVID-19 pushing mass transit to brink and low-income riders will pay the price, it reads in part. Low-income Americans have borne the brunt of the coronavirus pandemic. They may also get left behind in the recovery. Steep declines in ridership during the crisis have pushed public transit systems across the U.S. into deep financial distress. Though Congress included allocations for transit in the CARES Act, cities said it won't be nearly enough. Even major systems in large metro areas like New York City and Washington, D.C., have serious concerns about long-term survival without more sustained support. Failure of transit systems would be a disaster for the large proportion of low-income households that depend on buses and trains to get to work and elsewhere, not only in urban areas, but in rural ones, too. Again, failure of transit systems would be a disaster for the large proportion of low-income households that depend on buses and trains to get to work and elsewhere, not only in urban areas, but in rural ones, too. That speaks for itself. And amplifying how people of color, African Americans and others, and also people, as we will see in third world countries, are beset by this pandemic to a much greater extent. One of the aspects of the eugenic virus. The following column, op-ed column by Charles Blow, B-L-O-W, from the New York Times of April 5th of 2020. Social distancing is a privilege. Reads in part. People like to say that the coronavirus is no respecter of race, class, or country, that the disease COVID-19 is mindless, and will infect anybody it can. In theory, that is true. But in practice, in the real world, this virus behaves like others, screeching like a heat-seeking missile toward the most vulnerable in society. And this happens not because it prefers them, but because they are more exposed, more fragile, and more ill. But the vulnerable portion of society looks like varies from country to country, but in America, that vulnerability is highly intersected with race and poverty. Skipping down. If you touch people for a living in elder care or child care, if you cut or fix their hair, if you clean their spaces or cook their food, if you drive their cars or build their houses, you can't do that from home. Staying at home is a privilege. Social distancing is a privilege. The people who can't must make terrible choices. Stay home and risk starvation, or go to work and risk contagion. And this isn't just happening here. It is happening with poor people around the world, from New Delhi to Mexico City. And Blow makes a good point here, and we will be talking about how this is impacting people, poor people in this country and in the third world as well. Now, note again that preliminary results indicate that up to a fifth of the population of New York City have been infected. Obviously, many of those people have recovered, even given the variable of false positives in the testing. This suggests that they have been infected with one of the more mild variations of COVID-19, and there are a number of different variations of that. I want to encourage listeners to the program to get in the habit of using the SpitfireList.com website. There has been some marvelous contribution from Terra Fractlus, PTERRAFRACTYL, our contributing editor, about some of the scientific aspects of this and some of the mutations and variations in the different varieties of this disease. One of the things that has become clear is that COVID-19 attacks the T lymphocytes. That is the same type of lymphocyte that is attacked by the HIV. That certainly is one thing that is accounting for the wide symptomatology. Again, blood clotting, it attacks the brain, the heart, the kidneys, other things, not just the lungs. I also wonder about something like the cross-vectoring that figures in the serpent's walk scenario. We'll talk more about that in the future. But note, again, the fact that at least according to preliminary results, and again, false positives notwithstanding, up to a fifth of New Yorkers appear to have been infected. New York is being scapegoated in connection with this, and that plays directly into a right-wing slash fascist ideological construct. I would note, again, the 1966 experiment in which light bulbs filled with a harmless bacterium were tossed onto New York City subway tracks. Perhaps some vectoring agent like that might have been used to distribute the milder aspect of the milder variation, I should say, of COVID-19. In any event, last week we spoke about how Donald Trump was considering quarantining New York City with a military quarantine. Governor DeSantis of Florida was also talking about quarantining people who arrived from New York. Governor Raimondo of Rhode Island was doing the same thing. We met the following from the New York Times of April 5th of 2020 by Kim Phillips Fine, that's Phillips hyphen F-E-I-N. Scapegoating New York means ignoring its desperate need. Again, by Kim Phillips Fine. Skipping down. As President Trump put it in his short-lived bid to quarantine New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, quote, "Some people would like to see New York quarantined because it's a hot spot, the implication being that if New Yorkers could only be kept where they are with checkpoints and guards if need be, COVID-19 could be stopped from spreading elsewhere in the country." Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida set up checkpoints to stop cars with New York or Louisiana license plates so that state troopers can warn drivers to self-quarantine or face 60 days in jail. Skipping down. On Twitter, COVID-19 has taken on a new sobriquet, the Cuomo virus, unquote. There's a long history of scapegoating New York City for problems that have their roots far beyond the Hudson. In the 1970s, the Ford administration blamed New York's liberal politics, generous social safety net, and strong public sector unions for the fiscal crisis that almost brought the city to bankruptcy. And even though that crisis arose when the country as a whole was mired in recession, at a moment when federal policies encouraged suburban flight and the departure of factories from cities like New York. Despite the national context for the city's difficulties, President Gerald Ford warned that there could be no federal aid for the country's largest metropolis because it had brought its problems on itself. As his press secretary Ron Messen, M-E-S-S-E-N, put it, quote, "This is not a natural disaster or an act of God. It is a self-inflicted act by the people who have been running New York for a long time," unquote. Underlying Ford's punitive attitude was a deeper conservative critique of the city, its history of leftist politics, its tuition-free city university, and its network of public hospitals, several of which were closed in the fiscal crisis, all made New York suspect, as did its reputation as a center for the gay rights movement and feminism. The vision of New York as morally suspect, a city of sexual promiscuity and libertine mores, also helped shape the federal response to the AIDS epidemic of the 1980s. The Reagan administration failed so dismally in addressing the health crisis, not even mentioning it publicly for years after it had emerged, as it raged in part because AIDS was viewed as a disease of the cities, especially of gay men and IV users, not as a problem of the heartland. And of course, New York also has a very large Jewish population, a large population of black and Latino people, and again, a liberal tradition. New York is hated by the fascists. Nazi and fascist elements will refer to New York as Jew York City, that's J-E-W York City, or the New York Times as the Jew York Times. And the fact that New York City has more cases of COVID-19 than any country, or perhaps it's New York State. I think it's New York City. I was looking at a broadcast about a week ago, and it described New York City as having more proven cases than any country on earth. That is remarkable epidemiology and argues very, very powerfully against the notion that the virus originated in China and suggests very strongly that there is vectoring going on in New York. I will also note, even though Donald Trump has outdone himself by suggesting that people should ingest disinfectant and saying he wasn't a doctor, as he pointed to his head and said, but he had a really good you-know-what, and what that has to do with the virus is anybody's guess. I wouldn't bet that he doesn't get returned to office, because if, in fact, as I suspect, Nazi and fascist elements are vectoring this country, the red states that reopen sooner will not be beset by the COVID-19, whereas places like New York City will be stigmatized as hotspots for the virus. Certainly COVID-19 will adversely affect the census. That will affect congressional apportionment in congressional districts in the future. And although people right now are saying, well, Trump doesn't have a chance, it's a long time between now and November, and if in fact there is selective vectoring of red states and blue states, as I suspect, and we should note in that regard, it doesn't take many people at all to spread a microscopic pathogen, either a bacterium or a virus. It doesn't take many people at all, so the actual number of people involved could be very, very small indeed. We saw a Nazi named Larry Pratt connected to anthrax attacks in the 1990s. And again, this is something that wouldn't require a lot of people. Now, I'm going to run through a number of different New York Times and other headlines touching on various aspects of the eugenic / socioeconomic impact of this virus, because this virus on many different levels is manifesting a right-wing agenda. Obviously, the virus has no ideology, but this is a powerful right-wing manifestation at many levels, one of those eugenic. New York Times, April 16th of 2020, from the Western Edition, "Colleges running out of cash, worry students will vanish too," by Anemona, A-N-E-M-O-N-A, Hartocollis, H-A-R-T-O-C-O-L-L-I-S. "If, in fact, colleges begin to go down because of this, then only the wealthy will be able to get college educations. That will be a eugenic manifestation in and of itself, further stratifying the existing social order and benefiting the haves against the have-nots, as opposed to the have-nots. New York Times of April 16th, that same day, outbreak strains states' finances, unquote, by Mary Williams Walsh. The COVID-19 outbreak is drastically straining the finances of states and municipalities, and so far, rather like Gerald Ford saying to New York City, forget about it, Mitch McConnell has basically given the one-finger salute to the states and cities, saying they should declare bankruptcy. States can't declare bankruptcy. That, too, ultimately will benefit the haves and victimize the have-nots. That is a eugenic manifestation. This is going to be putting a lot of service workers, low-income or relatively modest income people out of work. The New York Times from that very same day, April 16th of 2020. Sales at U.S. stores hit catastrophic depths by Sapna Maheshwari, M-A-H-E-S-H-W-A-R-I, and Ben Castleman, again from the New York Times from that same day, talking about the devastating impact this is having on retail outlets. Some prognostications I have seen have forecast that as many as 75% of retail outlets will go out of business. That will put a lot of people out of work. Another one from AP story from the New York Times of April 15th of 2020. Evidence of virus effect on economy glows more ominous. It's an AP story. This talks about how maybe up to 40% of restaurants may go out of business. If in fact 75% or even 50% of retail outlets will go out of business and 40% of restaurants will go out of business, a lot of people will be out of work. That in turn will tsunami over directly to the commercial real estate market, and that in turn will tsunami over directly to the financial sector as well. When we get to the program about the China killing virus, one of the pressures has been to get American corporations to relocate their manufacturing facilities to the U.S. and so that the supply chain is not involving China. If, in fact, there are large numbers of unemployed, desperate workers who will work for a pittance, that could further that phenomenon. Now again, this virus is manifesting a eugenic consideration. Yet another article, this from Yahoo News, a Time Magazine article by Sami, S-A-N-Y-A, Mansour, from, this is from April 20th of this year. The food supply chain is breaking. Meat and poultry producers, dairy producers are facing very difficult times because of this. It remains to be seen how long this lasts, but certainly this will impact poorer people more. It also will lead to a rise in prices for milk, poultry, meat, etc. That also will hurt poorer people more. People in the third world, where there are poor medical facilities, people already have medical conditions, including bad diet, that will exacerbate COVID-19. There has been a lot of discussion of this. We're going to look at many different articles and op-ed columns, all from the April 23rd, 2020 Western edition of the New York Times. From that edition, front page article, 135 million face starvation. That could double by Abdi Latif Dahir. Again, getting rid of the useless bread gobblers. Op-ed column from that same New York Times, April 23rd of 2020. This pandemic is bringing another, this by Nicholas Kristof, talking about the hunger pandemic. The lead editorial in that same New York Times, April 23rd of 2020, COVID-19 threatens global safety net. Again, talking about how this is going to devastate the third world. Something else I would note in that regard, there was an op-ed, or a letter to the editor, I should say, in that same edition of the New York Times, April 23rd, 2020. It is talking about how government failed the elderly, unquote. This is in response to a front page article on April 18th. Death toll spikes at nursing homes as defenses crack. And it's talking about the large numbers of elderly people at nursing homes who are dying because of this. Again, the eugenic virus getting rid of the useless bread gobblers. The T4, the Tiergartenstrasse 4 virus. Noting again, as we looked at in For the Record 1013, one of the aspects of eugenic policy was the use of eugenic pseudoscience to exacerbate and reinforce existing social, ethnic, and socioeconomic prejudices, in turn affecting immigration. For the Record program 1013 is called Fascism and the Politics of Immigration. Donald Trump obviously has been very anti-immigrant throughout his entire administration. He has used the COVID-19 outbreak to basically put a brake on all immigration. That same New York Times, April 23rd of 2020, op-ed column by Jennifer M. Chacon, C-H-A-C-O-N, and Erwin Shermerinsky, C-H-E-R-M-E-R-I-N-S-K-Y, a limit on Trump's immigration power, unquote. Now think ahead. If in fact some of these third world countries that were described here as basically in the crosshairs of this virus because of increased lack of access to food, poor medical infrastructure that would make a COVID-19 outbreak even more devastating there, other overlying or coincidental medical conditions that would make them more vulnerable to COVID-19 infection. If in fact many of these third world countries do become hotbeds of COVID-19 infection, that might very well move not only Donald Trump, but others to slap very firm immigration limits or to completely ban immigration from some of those countries because of COVID-19. And again, as I mentioned at the top of the program, the delineations, the intellectual demarcation of the various aspects of the 6 or 7 dimensional chess for the bio-psyop apocalypse now are for intellectual understanding and clarity only. It is for cognitive purposes because they are all linked. And just as the poor are getting poorer, the wealthy are getting wealthier. We will be talking about that in our next program, the wealth concentration virus. 2 articles from that same edition of the New York Times, April 23rd of 2020, by Emily Flitter and Stacy Cowley. Banks steer richest clients to federal aid. No surprise there. And article by Jenna, G-E-A-N-N-A, Smialek, S-M-I-A-L-E-K, Jim Pankersley and Alan Rappaport, again from that same New York Times, 4-23-20. Millions in relief for backer of resorts. Some very wealthy people are feeding at the federal bailout trough. That is very much like 2007, 2008. And one of the people who is positioned with Steve Bannon and Tommy Hicks Jr. is J. Kyle Bass, who is invested asymmetrically to the Hong Kong and Chinese economies. We've spoken about the covert operation against Hong Kong. And COVID-19 certainly damaged the Chinese economy. That was J. Kyle Bass. And it was J. Kyle Bass who helped to bring down Bear Stearns the last time we had a tanking economy. This concludes For the Record program number 1127, Bio-Psyop Apocalypse Now, Part 3, The Eugenic Virus. This is being recorded on April 27th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.